Welcome to CREPN Radio for influential commercial real estate professionals who work with investors, buyers, and sellers of commercial real estate coast to coast. Whether you're an investor, broker, lender, property manager, attorney, or accountant, we're here to learn from the experts.
Welcome to Commercial Real Estate Pro Network's CREPN Radio. We're so glad you joined us. My name's Jader and Gross. I am a real estate investor and a commercial property insurance broker. I've been an insurance broker for 25 plus years. My primary client base is and has been people dealing in real estate, investors, landlords, property managers, and developers. Based on this, I'm constantly looking for more information about real estate investing for both my own investments and to better serve my clients. And that's how this podcast came about. Okay, before we get started today, I just want to remind you that if you're on social media, please accept my invitation to connect on any of the social media platforms. You can check out my website, my blog at jdarrengross.com for all the social media platforms we're on. And as for the show or any of our shows, we'd love to hear what you think of what we're doing. If you like what we're doing, please hit the like button. Share the program with others, or we'd love to hear from you in a comment. Your input is greatly appreciated. Okay, today's program. As a real estate investment class, I got to tell you, senior housing has not registered with me as an option. And that's why I was excited to speak with today's guest. Our guest today is an expert in senior housing. And when I say senior housing, your first thought is of an old, smelly place where your great-grandmother used to live and eat Jell-O, and you're not thinking of it as a potential real estate investment, tune in here. Be prepared to expand your mind and learn what options are available in the arena of senior housing real estate investments. All right, I'm excited today. We're going to get into the topic of senior housing. Today, we're fortunate to have a senior housing expert with us, Rick Lynn. He's with Marcus and Millichap. Rick, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I appreciate being here.
Rick, I got to tell you, the topic when I first, you and I first were talking about doing this, and my memory banks, I kind of rewound the tape and was thinking about senior housing, and some of my earliest memories were of the smell and the opportunity to go visit my great-grandmother in the nursing home back in the early 70s. And I know it's changed dramatically since then. I know my grandmother was in a retirement home. Well, it was a retirement home. Heck, it was not even assisted living. It was independent living. I understand there's a very distinct difference. It was more like living in a resort. She had all of her friends and activities going on all the time. She was more active than my parents were. And right now I'm looking at, kind of facing the whole conversation again with my mom. So I'm excited to get into this a little bit. And before we do, if you could give us a little bit about your background and tell us what you do there at Marcus Millichap.
Oh, well, thank you, Darren. I appreciate it. So I've been in commercial real estate my entire career, mostly in the financing side. And where I would be involved in really financing properties from $1 million up to $100 million and all property types, which are the typical that your group, the listeners get involved in apartments and office and retail and industrial. And that was a majority of my career. And recently I found the senior housing space to be very interesting. Throughout my career, I provided some loans from HUD, from Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which are big housing lenders for multifamily, but they also do senior housing. And as time went on, it became more and more interesting. And so a couple years ago, I decided to get into investment sales of senior housing. And my role at Marcus and Millichap is to help owners, both individuals as well as institutions, understand the value of their properties and at the appropriate time help them to sell it or structure an ownership structure that helps them financially.
Got it. And, you know, I think one of the first things that comes to my mind is, you know, with an apartment or a multifamily property, or a commercial office, however you want to say it, I'm very familiar with the structure, and then you have the operation side of it. And the operations can either be owner-operated or subcontract out to a management company. And I think one of my questions is, in this type of an asset, is that the same? Is there, I mean, can you own the property and sub out the management? Are there operators that will lease these properties? Or when you buy, are you also signing up to operate a senior housing facility?
That's really an excellent question. And what differentiates senior housing from, I would say, all other property types for a variety of reasons. But there can be an owner-operator that operates the property and the real estate. But you can separate those two. They call them OpCo and PropCos. One group could own the real estate, and another group could be the operator. And the third group could be a manager for the owner of the real estate. And why that kind of put in perspective, what you see in the world today is the property, someone who owns a property, a REIT, whether public or non-public, can own the real estate, and the yields that they require are much less. And so they could pay a lot more money for the real estate than an owner-operator. The operations people, you know, those are, they have different objectives, and so they can use their real estate. The value of the real estate can be very high by splitting it up this way and just getting a lease, an obligation from the operator to continue to operate the facility.
Got it. Are the majority of the properties, or I guess I'm kind of trying to think this through, the size of the properties, does that dictate a lot of whether or not it's a more of a REIT-owned property? Or?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it's not size. In senior housing, they're smaller. You know, you're 60, you know, a core number is 60 units up to 100 and 20 units. 40 units would be considered small, not enough critical mass, and over 120 units could be too big, just depending on if it's freestanding or not. So the REITs actually would buy, with how they would look at it, they'd look at a portfolio of 10 properties, say, that are 60 to 100 units and generating very, very good cash flow, and then have an operator sign a lease to them so they get a steady flow of income stream. So it is possible they could be smaller, but still quality assets.
Got it. So that kind of brings me to what are the different, do you call them type of or class of senior housing? How is it differentiated? I mean, there's, you know, level of care and lifestyle. How is it that the market is segmented? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. On a very broad brush scale, it's just kind of like you were saying, it depends on the acuity, which means how sick is the residents. And the sicker one becomes, the further down the scale that they enter. And so the least sick or the most independent people are independent living facilities. And those are where people can, you know, generally go out and about, you know, either by themselves or someone drives. They can handle their own personal hygiene themselves and really take care of themselves for the most part with just a little bit of a nudge from somebody on site. But there is no health facilities or direct health support that people are getting at the facilities. It's really independent living, and those properties provide generally food service, 3 meals a day, 2 to 3, depending on what it is, maid service, social activities, transportation here and there. And so the benefit of that is the ability to have socialization and not be isolated in a home alone, and for people to provide those services. Does that make sense? That type, that's the least acuity or least, you know, easiest.
Right, kind of apartments for seniors. I mean, because you're, I mean, like you said, although you do get the food and the maid and the transportation there, so clearly a level up from, you know, living in an apartment somewhere, but and you have the community thing, I think, is kind of what I see there. But yeah, got it. Yeah.
Actually, Darren, to step back one step that might be helpful for the listeners is what's unique about senior housing. It's the intersection of three different industries. One is real estate. That's where the real estate is owned. Another is healthcare and how much you have to provide the elderly. And the third one is hospitality. Is that, you know, how happy are people in the location? And kind of with your comment earlier, is that your grandmother, you know, is a smelly, you know, uncomfortable place to go to. They lean, let's just say, very heavily to the healthcare side. And right. Now it's moving, you know, more to the hospitality side and providing the healthcare when it's needed.
Right. Now, it's clearly night and day compared to what I remember, as a youth visiting. It's quite the happening place. I know the happy hour, the social calendar was very active, and everybody was excited to mingle and see their friends. So that's good.
Go through all the other ones. I'll stop at each one and ask the question so in case I have not explained them clearly.
Okay.
So the independent living, there's no health and, you know, no help, just a little nudge and no help. Then the next is assisted living. And those units, you know, as you go down the acuities, you know, scale, the sizes of the units get, you know, smaller. But assisted living would be an example of that. And that's where people would, where there would be help with your medicine, with dressing, with bathing. You know, there'd be help along the way, but not a complete health, you know, help. And just you need help with living type of needs, your daily needs, but physically you're in good shape. So that's what an assisted living would be, and that has all the other amenities like the independent living.
Got it. So still high functioning, but just needing some help?
Yes, and it actually could be a range from high functioning, you know, it could be a very, that range could be very high depending on the individual, but it would be before the nursing home, before all their physical, you know, needs would have to be met. And
gotcha.
They have health issues.
All right. Does that then leave us with nursing?
Actually, no, there's one thing in between, which is really becoming a very prevalent level of care, and that's memory care. Our world, our doctors are doing a great job keeping us physically fit, but our minds are, you know, many of us, our minds are going sooner than our bodies. And
yeah.
So the memory care is a very important element and will be more in the future, you know, going forward as people, you know, stay alive longer.
Right.
And those facilities are heavily, the residents generally are in good physical shape, but and you know, their memory is gone. And so those are usually locked units because people get lost where they're at. So, you know, they're locked units and they're really controlled what those individuals, where they can go and what they can do. They're up, when you go to one of these facilities, they're up and about, and you may not even realize it. They have a little bit of some issue, but they're controlled and there's usually more help. There's more nursing help or CNA, you know, healthcare help there because the residents need more individual attention.
Gotcha. All right, and then if you go beyond that and you're still your care has escalated, is that when you get to the nursing?
Right, and so then the last is the classic nursing, you know, the nursing home that you knew of when you were growing up. And you know what it used to be, kind of like you said with your grandmother, you just went there, you know, you were sick and old, you went there and you just, you know, left finished your days at that location. It's not that way anymore. It's changing. There's
right.
still some that are legacy to that, but it's very much changing. And, you know, one thing that with all the Obamacare and the health changes are going on, where people, they're becoming short-term hospitals. So when people come out of a hospital, they might do their rehab at a nursing home. And that has become a very active business now for short-term stays. They ask you if you have a knee replacement or hip, something like that. You could go to a nursing home and get the care that way. And then they have some long-term residents, but the short-term part is a very incremental part of their business in nursing homes. And they are updating those, making them, it's important. The buyers of the services are generally the children of the older people. They say a 45 to 65-year-olds take care of their parents. And so they are designing and putting money in to satisfy the baby boomer, tradition or the generation.
Right. Now, it's one of those things I've been talking with my wife about it. You don't see it until you get there as far as where you fit in the puzzle, but your eyes kind of open wide when you realize what's directly ahead of you. So I'm listening in twofold. One to learn about the market for my clients and that, and then also on a personal level. There's I think we all know nobody stays forever. You got to move through the system here.
Just along those lines, before you go on, which from the shopper's perspective, the industry generally has done a pretty weak job in marketing and training the general public on what senior housing is about. They all feel it's your grandmother, but it really serves a great benefit. Is that for you and for me and the other listeners is, once you leave your house, you get into this environment and they take, you can have socialization. It's a good way to age. It is a very comfortable way to age. You stay stimulated. There are many benefits to it. And the industry needs to do a much better job of educating, the public at large.
Right. Well, my hunch is that, marketing continues to evolve and they're going to get a whole new chance with the baby boomers as they become kind of the primary resident in these different properties. So I'm sure that will evolve here.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So now that we know a little bit about the different levels of care and kind of segmented the senior housing market, and you can be an operator or you can be strictly a landlord. Let's just go here. Is the baby boomer group, are they moving the needle? Is the supply, is there demand for more housing? Is the supply is it a steady thing? Is there demand for this product?
Yeah. So it's interesting. The baby boomers are just really, in a big force like they have everywhere else they've been, are really getting into this age. And I think the number is like 10,000 people a day. And so the demand, the demographics are definitely pushing in that direction. And the new development and the people in this industry are trying to catch the wave at the right time. And that's that's an art, not a science, when the right time is. Because historically, people would go to senior housing when they're 80 or 85, and the baby boomers now are 65 to 70. And so you have that 10-year gap. But they are preparing for it. There is new supply coming online and new demand, and the industry overall is in very good shape. It's a good balance between supply and demand.
Does it vary greatly between your markets, your primary, secondary, and tertiary? Is there a gravitation towards kind of your Sun Belt, or do people continue to kind of age in the community that they're from?
Yeah, actually, it's an interesting question. Everybody likes the Sun Belt and they enjoy going there. But at the end of the day, what really drives this, the important part of this business is being close to family. And if you're, 45 to 65-year-old and your grandkids are in Chicago or New York, it's a very high probability you're going to live within, 5 to 10 miles from where they're at. That's a majority of where the residents come. There's always an exception. And the forward-thinking people are going to Florida and Texas to the warm places, the baby boomers to move on. But then people always, being close to home is probably the primary demographic of people who are using these facilities.
Gotcha. Well, you just sent me a, as you said, hot off the press, kind of some graphs here. And I'm wondering if you can kind of talk us through these here as far as the, you know, your supply, demand, and let's see, we have some occupancy rates, inventory, and then I guess the different, rents, rent growth in these properties. Can you talk, let's talk a little bit about, I guess we talked a little bit about demand.
Let me start with the supply and demand.
Yeah.
We can go each one of these, kind of probe them. You know, right now in senior housing, it is the balance is it's about a 90% occupancy, which is a very strong, it's very strong. It's, you know, from the depth of the depression in 08 and 09, it was probably 87%, and now it has gone up to 90%. So there's been good movement in a good direction, and that's at a point where it's a good balance between supply and demand. There is inventory being built, but there's also the absorption is ahead right now is ahead of the inventory. Inventory growth, just as a put in perspective, is about 2,000 to 4,000 units a year.
Gotcha. Is 90% occupancy, is that considered full? I know, like in multifamily, you know, nobody wants to be 100% because that kind of caps you from rent growth and that. But is 90% considered full, or do they actually hit 100%?
No. Well, there are some unique, you know, facilities that do and have waiting lists. Mm-hmm. So they're definitely some of the primary ones in the marketplace. But overall, the market, that's a good balance point, a very good balance point. And just talking about, you know, comparing it to real estate, the location for real estate is really, really important. And in senior housing, it's very important. But what's really, really important is the operations. The operator, they are the ones that make, you know, that generate the income and create the value for the properties. You need to be in a good location, but a great operations. And when you have that, then you can have a waiting list. And there are facilities that are in that situation.
Gotcha. Let's see here. It looks like you've got a graph here that talks about occupancy by the primary markets. Let's see here. We've got
I'll just jump in.
Okay.
It's a very interesting graph, because the independent living is not kind of how people differentiate some of the senior housing is between something that you have to have, like a memory care. You have to put someone in there versus independent, which is optional, which is, you know, nobody has to go into independent living. That's a lifestyle change versus a medical need. And it's showing that the occupancy for these independent living facilities have gone up steadily since, you know, 10 and 11, meaning people can sell their house and wanting to change. So that's a very positive, statistic for the industry.
Yeah, that is great. I mean, to be able to sell your property, have the money and move into the lifestyle living there, it's great.
The other two, just very quickly, the nursing home business, that is losing occupancy, and the trends show it. It went from like 88% to 87% on a, you know, global basis. That's the beds are changing. As I mentioned a few minutes ago, they're going from long-term to short-term, and the owners of those have to work much harder to fill them up and keep them full. So that is on the decline. And then while I have the microphone, the assisted living facilities are also the occupancy is in that 88% range, but that's for a different reason. And that's where the majority of the new inventory is coming, right in between the independent living and the nursing home. So that's why that is closer to the 88% occupancy.
Oh, because of the increased inventory?
Yes.
Keeping that?
That's the core of the inventory. To do a nursing home, generally, not all states, but many states require that you have something called a certificate of need. And that means you have to show that there's a need. And so that creates barriers to entry to the marketplace, where assisted living doesn't have as much control. It has some, and they are licensed, but not to the same level of control. And so that's kind of the sweet spot where people are getting involved. If you're a developer of commercial real estate, you probably would be very highly unlikely to try to develop a nursing home, but you might try an assisted living. It's still very risky, and it's very different than your apartments, but it is one that's a potential, and that has driven some of the supply in the marketplace.
So the assisted is where the growth is.
The assisted and memory care is where there's the most amount of construction.
Gotcha. Is memory care in, like, for these graphs, is it lumped in kind of in that assisted living?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Gotcha. Here we go. This is always a topic that investors want to know about: rent growth. What's the rent growth been, and what are the projections like?
Yeah, it's actually been as high in 07, 08, as high as 4%, 3.5% to 4%. Been trending now it's kind of where inflation is or where the market is. It's somewhere between 2.5% and 3%. So there is some, decent rent growth to stay ahead of inflation and increase that way.
Gotcha. And the makeup of these properties, do they typically, how do I say this? If I have an independent living property, is it typically going to be 100% independent living, or are there a variety of, some will have, 85% independent living with some assisted living, or will they also have some memory care, in the breakdown of the units? If you have an 80 unit property, would there be a little bit of that, or does it come in all shapes and sizes and varieties?
No, that's a great question and a great lead into how they're structured. So there's one where it's freestanding. So you have a freestanding nursing home, 120 beds, a freestanding memory care facility, 60 or 80 beds, or a freestanding independent living facility of 120 beds or units, let's say units. So those are freestanding. Then the next potential is combined, where they might have assisted living and memory care in the same facility. And so there could be like 60 assisted living beds and 20 memory care. And so that's a different model, and it does work well. People go into one facility and then they stay for longer. They go through the acuity level, or as they get sicker, they have another place to go to at that level. Then there is something which covers all those called a CCRC, which is a continuing care retirement community. Many of them, just as this is digressing for a moment, Darren, is that this industry is comprised of both profit and nonprofit organizations. The non-for-profits, which are religious, many of them are religious, but other affiliations as well, is a very, very forceful part of this industry. And generally, they're very mission-based, and they're there to help the seniors to have a good lifestyle. And so that, as the people out there are going to explore these, they'll come into that, and those are a really solid option, the non-for-profits. And the reason I said that is that gets into the discussion, is that the different levels of cares in the CCRC, or Continuing Care Retirement Community, it has all the levels of care. And so you may start as an independent living, you're doing your thing, but as you get sicker, you go into assisted living, sicker from that memory care, sicker from that in nursing home, and never have to leave the campus. And those would be significantly larger than when we're talking 80 to 120 units. It could be 15 to 25 acres of places. And those are a really good alternative and very interesting. And I would encourage any listener sometime to stop at one of those and get a tour and see what it's like.
Sure. No, I think always better to educate yourself before you are facing that point where you have to make a decision. I'm curious on the business model. And when you're operating as a broker for Marcus Millichap, are you presenting it both ways? Are you presenting more of the structure, the facility as a property investment? Or are you also do you get involved in the business side when you're representing these properties?
Actually, we get involved in all aspects of it because we can structure a transaction differently depending on the needs of the owners and the operators. So we really get involved in both the operations as well as the real estate. So for example, we could help someone who is an owner-operator, and he said, I don't like this, I'm tired. I don't want to do this business anymore, the operations of it, but I like the income stream that I have for my property, and I like my property. Go find me, Rick, somebody who's willing to be my tenant. And so we could help them to bring a tenant in there to operate the facility. And very often those tenants have an option to purchase the property 5 to 10 years out. Excuse me one second. So we can help, we can help structure that. And so we are involved in all aspects. We help operators find people that own real estate. And then we have people that have the real estate to find the operators, like I was saying about the lease. And so we really help to structure the transaction, and it makes it very complicated. It's a much more complicated structuring than most commercial real estate.
Yeah, I'll say. I was just thinking here while you were talking, the better part of the last 20 years, I've thought of it's more of the CCRC model you referenced, where there is a buy-in, if you will, a large deposit before you occupy, you have to, I don't know if it's buying or inference fee or what it is. Are you deeded to the, I don't think you're deeded to anything, are you, other than that? I think it's just for commitment for the ongoing care, and this kind of gets away from the real estate thing, but I was kind of curious if the business, where I was actually going with it is this. Are you seeing when you are dealing with these properties, including the operations part, is that model, is it changing? Is it a tried and true model? Are there multiple variations? Am I making any sense?
You are. I'll try and clear. Definitely, there are many different machinations that would make it challenging. What you were referring to is an entrance fee. And very often the CCRCs, which just say that they look to an entrance fee that means you come as an independent person and you spend, somewhere between $100,000 and $200,000 to get into the facility. And they charge you that one lump sum. Then during your stay there, you pay monthly rent like you would any. It's really more an assessment than a rental stream because you've purchased your unit. And then when you pass away, your heirs would get somewhere between 80 to 90% of the value of the money that you put in there at day one. So it would go back to the heirs, but during that time, the companies would have the money. It's a complicated system, and there are still some of those that are being built, but generally, more and more are moving away from that. More of the facilities are moving more to a rental or pay-as-you-go, pay-for-services model.
Gotcha. And that was kind of what I was I had seen a little bit. And I would assume as far as the business operations goes, I would think, does that change the model quite a bit? I mean, to have those big deposits, from the residents on your balance sheet there, and the access to that money would seem to be, a big luxury when you're operating a facility, whether it be needing new carpet, roof, parking lot, whatever that might be. Does the model for the operations change dramatically on the balance sheet when you go from one to the other?
Yeah, no, I think it's more than we can talk about in this session. It really gets very complicated because sure. It becomes a liability to the, to the operators. And so, if everything's going good, they'll have the money and there'll be a waiting list for people to come in and everything runs smooth. Those are a lot of variables that have to line up. If any of them don't, then there is something, there's some pressures there, and there have been some pressures along the way, and it adds to the complexity of the whole, financial structure of these facilities.
Sure. Let's move on here. So where I'm more familiar, just kind of as a rule of thumb, is a net operating income, somewhere around 50% of your what you take in is what you're hoping you can operate the facility for, especially like apartments and that. Do those percentages do they continue into the senior living market, or is it a whole different model for operating in?
Yeah, no, a great question. Actually, I interpret the gross margins of the income that you are making. And it definitely has a very significant impact on all the different quality levels and the acuity level. So an independent living would be similar to an apartment, where the margins could be, 25% up to 50%. And it could really, have that wide of a spread. And then when you go down where there's more health care and operation heavy, it's really operation heavy. Like for a nursing home, it could go down to 10 to 20% gross margins. So it really depends on the acuity level of what it is. So it's a very important part of the equation and of the valuation of the businesses.
Right. Okay. Looking through here. So let me ask you is it a buyer's market or a seller's market for senior housing right now, or are cap rates rising or compressing? Or
yeah, no, I would say the market as it always is, but it's in transition. Mm-hmm. It's changing, and I would say over the last couple years, looking in the rear view mirror, there was excess amount of capital available for this industry. A lot of that has been driven by the REITs. Which they, both the public and the non-public or the private REITs have just attracted a lot of capital and put it into the industry and have driven prices up. It's because there's been so much liquidity. And people were, there was a lot of capital available and a lot of transactions, both large and small, being completed and a lot of capital. I would say that the capital is still there, but it's more cautious now. People mm-hmm. are... We talked a little bit earlier about supply. Until the last, 12 to 18 months, supply wasn't an issue at all. But now it's an issue. And so people, when they're making these investments, they're looking at what is the – they're asking – they always did, but they're asking a lot more, what is the supply, what's in the pipeline. And so the capital is definitely there. There's people that are interested. They're just doing a little bit more due diligence. And the peak of the market from a valuation standpoint, if we're not there, we're very close to the peak from a valuation standpoint.
Gotcha.
What's interesting about this is it really, it's a full spectrum of the investors in this. The investors can be the institutional buyers like the REITs that you hear about, but they're also the individuals. There are still a lot of, I'll say, mom and pops that are in the business that can make a go of it and give very good service. And then there's the middle of the road, people that, can own 5 to 20 of these facilities and have a good business of it. So there's the full spectrum of what is available from an investor standpoint. You can get in it at all the different levels.
No, I'm glad you said that, because I was thinking of, you know, just that level of opportunity for people. You know, REITs are clearly an animal all by themselves, but you mentioned the, I guess the and you gave me a phrase for before, an OPPRO or
an OPCO and PROPCO.
OPCO and a PROPCO or PROPCO. Yeah. So if I do have one of these senior housing facilities and I'm tired of operating, and I call you up and say, Rick, what can we do here? You could find an operator could come in and they sign a lease?
Very often they would sign. They could do a management agreement, but very often they would sign a lease. And that would be, you know, the ultimate for the owner. The real estate is a triple net lease, just like
it is. As you say, that's the dream for a property owner, is have the tenant that's going to take care of everything, right?
That is correct. And that's how many of them are structured, completely triple net, and the operator takes care of all the expenses, and the owner of the real estate just clips the coupon and then pays the debt service, however they received the loan.
Gotcha.
So
the opportunity then for the, like you said, the mom and pop then with some sort of a sunset to buy the property or a purchase option on that, still an opportunity for them to get in and continue to get in as a small-time investor.
Yeah, no, there's no question about it. And actually, we're working on an opportunity now that really the potential buyer could be an individual, could be a quasi mom and pop. It's a 136 unit independent living facility that needs to be worked. It needs somebody hands on. It needs the mom and pop to be there and work it. But if they do, it can be very successful. And it's by being the independent living, it's much more hospitality oriented than healthcare. And so it's a very big part of the community that could work, could do that. An individual maybe retired, came from a corporation or something and likes working with people. It could be a very good opportunity for them to roll up their sleeves and do very well. And there's a need for housing for these people, for seniors.
Sure.
There's definitely a need for them. And so there, that is an opportunity we're working on right now that could be, an individual, an entrepreneur that could take on both the ownership of the real estate and the operations.
And that's an existing operation?
Yes, it is. Yes, it's one. It's one that it's one that is up and operating, and so a good foundation for a good starting point for someone to get into. You're not starting from square one, from the start. You have a little bit more time because, just in this industry, digressing a little bit, is that, when you have apartments, they can lease up. You know how long it's going to take to lease up. It's the standard emotions that people come to that area. This generally is much more unpredictable, the senior housing, because you're dealing with seniors and a lot more variables than a typical apartment. And so the general lease-up time to get the stabilization could be 18 to 24 months by the time that you get people to make these very important decisions, lifetime decisions.
So, right.
Yeah. And so this particular opportunity we're talking about has already reached a threshold of, that level, and now it's just somebody to take it to the next level. And that could be, there are those opportunities for people.
That's interesting. You mentioned the challenges there. I was thinking you probably don't have the raging parties or anything like that that the neighbors are complaining about, though, from the tenants. That'd be good. I was just sitting here thinking. You had mentioned something to me that I wanted to be sure to ask.
Darren, while you're doing that, let me just put in perspective just some numbers to get for people to get a feel for the industry. I just give you average. It's not the exact, but the kind of the level of asking rents for the different continuum. So an independent living is generally between $2,000 to $3,000 with the midpoint of $2,500. And so that's just independent living food. What the owner's providing is food service and some entertainment, some socialization. Going to the next level, then the assisted living, it is a much broader, you know, level of service and how much help and support they need there. But those are generally, the rents there are between $3,500 and $4,500 per resident per month. Of course, it varies between one part of the country and the other, but that's sure. important. The memory care, which requires, you know, quite a bit more help and support, those are generally between $5,000 and $6,000, you know, per unit per month. And then the nursing home, which is very different. We really didn't talk about it. I'll take 2 minutes and talk about it now. Is the nursing home very often is sold by the day. And this is more where the government supports the nursing home industry with Medicaid and Medicare. And so the nursing home companies have to be very astute at how to work with the government through those agencies for reimbursements. And so that could range from, you know, on a daily basis from $150 a day for just typical long-term care to $300 to $400 a day for short-term rehab Medicare. So that's kind of, I think it gives you a good idea of kind of the pricing and the rents that are generally found in the industry.
Got it. No, that was, I'm glad you brought that up. There was, that was one of the things. The, just take a quick peel through here. Let's see, we talked about expenses. Let's see.
Demand. I guess I'll jump in.
Yeah, please do. Yeah.
The other metrics that are important as well, for all your commercial real estate people, generally commercial real estate is valued on something called the cap rate.
Right.
So, I don't want to get it. That could be a long-term discussion, but most people, if they are aware of it, that's turning the income stream into value. And to give you a sense in these different industries, these different property types, of course, as you know, the independent living, the least acuity, the least operation oriented, those cap rates today are, they're trading in the 6 to 7% range for typically. You can go less than that, you know, for a unique situation or more than that, but the independent living is like a 6 to 8%. The assisted living and memory care are generally 7 to 8%. So it's a range of 6 to 8% for senior housing. The unique area is nursing homes or skilled nursing, and those have historically been a very high number because of the operation risk. And they're, you know, the really low end is 10%, but the, generally the cap rates for those are 11 to 12%, and based on the cash flow. But the cash flows can be very high if you get a good, you know, if you do, if you keep your census, your number of residents up, paying a good daily rate.
Got it. Now I know what I, where I was going. You had offered up a research report. I wanted to make sure our listeners were aware of, and I'll have a link in the show description about this. Wanted to see if you could tell a little bit about the report, and then also who provides the data that supports this.
It actually is. When you send it out, it's our company. Being Marcus and Millichap, we have really one of the best research departments for all property types. So if people are in other things, they can sign online. It's complimentary to the marketplace, and they really are excellent. And we do the study ourselves. We do many of the numbers that I was talking about earlier. The main organization for senior housing that tracks all this data is called NIC. And that's the National Investment Center for Senior Housing. They're out of Washington, D.C., and they pull together many of the statistics that Darren and I have been talking with today, and they do a wonderful job, and they really have very much brought this industry into where everyone knows where things are at and where they're going. So very transparent is the right word. So NIC out of Washington, D.C. is a major source. But then Marcus and Millichap, we do our own. But we also, we do our own research and our own information. But also we take some of the things from NIC and other organizations. And that's Darren, what you can send to the listeners, and it will kind of go over many of the things we talked about today.
Yeah, it's a great report, kind of talking about the different levels of care and the demand and supply for each and rents and all that. I thought it was a great tool, and then even talking about different areas in the country with the occupancy rates and let's see, year over year basis point average. And but anyway, it's a very comprehensive report and great source of information. Let me ask you this: as far as you're based in Chicago, are you limited territorially, or do you work nationwide? Somebody had an opportunity they wanted to talk to you about.
Actually, it's really senior housing is a national business.
Okay.
It's just we have associates at Marcus and Millichap that are in different parts of the country, but each one of us can handle an inquiry throughout the entire country. So, for example, I'm working now on properties that are in Minnesota, in Tennessee, in California. We understand the different nuances. If not, we find out from our associates or from from different sources. And so, and many of our owners, the larger owners, do own properties in a variety of states, or they cluster them in certain sections of the country. So, we'll be glad to respond to any question on a confidential basis to help people out.
That's great. Rick, I'm full of information, and you've given me a great perspective on the industry that I hadn't had previously, and honestly just didn't recognize as the real estate investment opportunity that it is. And I want to thank you for enlightening me and our listeners. Is there anything before we close this out that we didn't talk about that you wish that I would have asked?
I think you've done a wonderful job. You really covered the key nuts and bolts of the business for people to understand. And I think what hopefully we conveyed is don't be scared of it. It is a great product and can make life, the quality of life for your loved ones much better in their, in later days of their life. And I'll leave on this one note. A very close friend of mine, great-grandmother, passed away this week at 107 years old, and she had a great life till the end. She was at one of these senior housing places, and so it really had the extending of her life was very. She had a good quality of life until the end, and that's what the objective of the owner operators of these they really are is to be have a good quality of life for their residents.
Well, that's always great to hear. Somebody had a nice, long lived life and a great quality of care. I love to hear that. Before we close here, what's the best way for somebody to reach out to you for more information?
I think, what would you prefer? Should I give them a phone number, email?
I can list it on the call or on the show details. If you want to give it give it now, or I can list
it. I'd be glad to. Okay. It's easy. Please do that, but also mine's very easy. Everybody says it's a good Yahtzee hand, someone said. My phone number, which gets me everywhere, is 847-444-0044. Again, that's 847-444-0044.
Got it. Well, Rick, again, I thank you so much for taking the time out to educate us, and look forward to doing it again here in the future.
I appreciate it. Have a great day and a great new year.
There it is, my interview with Rick Lynn of Marcus Millichap. I hope you enjoyed today's program and learned about the senior housing market as a real estate investment option. And don't forget, Rick is offering a free senior housing market research report for you, and you can get that by clicking on the link below in the show notes. Check it out. It's very, very informative. And lastly, I want to ask a favor. If you like the show, please let us know. We'd love to hear from you. You can like, you can share, you can follow, you can comment We would love to hear from you. Until next time, thanks for listening to Commercial Real Estate Pro Network's CREPN Radio.
You're listening to CREPN Radio for influential commercial real estate professionals. For more information on this or any of our guests, like us on Facebook, CREPN Radio.